Hey guys. Today's episode of Blessed and Highly Dysfunctional is going to be a follow-up to my earlier podcast episode, What Happens in the Dark. We're taking another look at the Gabby Petito case and a little closer look at the Laundries. A few of my conspiracy theories that I may be crazy for even putting into words. And just where this investigation in this case have failed. So join me today for What Happens in the Dark, Part 2, Real Justice for Gabby. I just want to revisit the earlier blog post regarding the Gabby Petito case. In the first post, I went over how good and evil are at odds with one another and that this case was a prime example of a dark entity trying to overshadow a bright light. I stated that no matter if Brian was found or not, that God would have the final say, and that is still the case, even if he took his own life. There will be a day that he'll be judged, whether he's judged here on earth by a jury. He will face consequences from his maker. Brian Laundrie's remains were identified on October 21st by dental comparison. This has not satisfied the majority of people who've been following the case. The reason why people are not really convinced the remains are Brian's are because of the public's distrust in the investigation and in the main characters. The Northport Police Department have faced a lot of scrutiny over the handling of the case. The most recent disappointment coming out this week that they mistook Brian Laundrie for his mother, Roberta. I just keep thinking of the Northport Police Department like this small town, Andy Griffith, Barney Fife type precinct. In their defense, Brian was only a person of interest in the case, but how inept can you be to mistake a young, fit, balding 24-year-old man for a middle-aged, frumpy woman who most days wears the same thing, a pink ball cap, pink tennis shoes, and culottes? Time to replace your surveillance team, Northport. Also, they've just been executing a really unprofessional investigation. Their spokesperson, Josh Taylor, reports to News Nation reporter Brian Enton that they're working very closely with the FBI, but then they can't answer questions on whether Northport and the FBI have the same information. These inconsistencies offer up loopholes for the Laundries and their attorney to use to their advantage. Finding Brian's remains should not have created more questions than answers. We have the Northport Police Department, who've now admitted that they botched the surveillance on Brian Laundrie, allowing Chris and Roberta to come out and search the morning after the Carlton Reserve opened back up to the public. The day before the Laundrie showed up to search for their son, they're on camera visiting a bank with Chris Laundrie standing on the sidewalk before the doors even opened, two AT&T stores, a Walmart purchasing a lot of supplies, and mailing a FedEx package. What was in the box? Up until this day, the Laundries have ventured out of their home very little and for short periods of time. They were relying on Uber Eats and DoorDash type deliveries, so on this day, to see their activity change direction should have alerted authorities. What were they doing out of their house for that long? What were they doing yet again at a cell phone store when they were just there in September buying Brian a new phone? What did they need to do in-person banking for? And what supplies were purchased? And for goodness sake, what did they FedEx? For all we know, they could have been FedExing incriminating evidence to family members out of state. I am not a trained investigator, but this outing looked like a couple of people making preparations. Now, I don't know if these were preparations because they knew their son was already deceased, but the fact that an extensive errand run with these specifics involved is enough to raise eyebrows. Why? Because the same night of the errand run, they contact law enforcement and made them aware that for the first time since their son had gone missing, they were going out to search for him, willingly. Strange timing? I think so. After all of this, they show up to the Miakahatchee Creek Environmental Park and meet two Northport police officers who show up to assist with the search. The park was opened back up to the public the day before, the day the Laundries were running their errands. So the park had been unsecured for approximately 24 hours. Roberta shows up with her husband Chris wearing a red dry bag style backpack. Nowhere is it reported that the Northport police asked her to reveal what was in the bag before the search. It was reported that they went to the park about 2 miles or approximately a 30 to 45 minute walk. At that point, it was reported that the two Northport police officers separated from the Laundries. Why? Who thought it was a good idea to separate from two people who have been so uncooperative and unwilling to assist their investigation? The Laundries took one of the trails that they stated that Brian frequented, On video, and I've yet to see in the article who was doing the filming, it shows Chris Laundrie taking a definitive left into the woods off the trail while Roberta stood in the path. He walked a good ways into the trail and had not appeared to venture into the woods at all until this particular point. Why this particular spot? Is Chris Laundrie this intuitive? How did he know exactly how many steps to take and at what juncture to turn into the bramble and within seconds find his son's dry bag? You can say coincidence all day long, but there is no way. He somehow had knowledge of where to look, whether Brian was in communication on his exact location, and then maybe the Laundries lost communication, and that's what prompted the sudden interest in looking for their son, or maybe some other explanation. Next, he says he couldn't leave the dry bag to go get officers because a reporter was nearby. He absolutely knew he should not touch that evidence, but picked it up and took it to the officers who had just happened upon Brian's book bag and possible remains. While showing the remains to the Laundries on the dirt path in the park, a random bystander walking his dog comes within feet of the officer showing the Laundries the evidence they found. In what serious professional investigation are people allowed to bob and weave that close to evidence? The very minute those findings were discovered, the park should have been shut down and the area closed off. The magnitude of these coincidences is mind-blowing, and the ignorance of the police officers to allow so much leeway of two people who had not earned the right to conduct the search in the first place. Some people have implied that they think the Laundries placed the remains, and again, that goes back to public mistrust. Dental record comparison is supposed to be highly accurate, but do we know that this was a partial skull? I'm curious to know, when they report that it is a partial skull, what shape the teeth were in. If the skull was damaged significantly, could some of the teeth have been missing, compromised? We just don't know. Also, we're still awaiting for DNA results and anthropology analysis. I have toyed with so many possibilities. Just real conspiracy theories, you guys. And I've come up with some really crazy ideas, but I'm going to state them. You know, it sounds crazy, but here we go. I have thought about this bunker scenario. Although I wasn't down with that theory and I never really committed to the quote-unquote hand in the flower bed chaos, I can't help thinking about the timeline of the Laundries' extended outing and then finding their son 24 hours later. It's keeping me up at night. What if, here it comes, I'm cringing even saying the words, but what if the Laundries reported Brian missing in the beginning to protect him and to help cover for him, and told the authorities that he was in the Carlton Reserve so that everyone would focus their efforts there, while they were helping him cover up a crime, while he was either at their home, unlikely, or in a secured location. And while he was in a secured location, he committed suicide. From ongoing guilt, from the pressure of what he had done, from the loss of someone he loved. Let's just say that after he was reported missing by his parents, he took his own life. What would the Laundries have done? They would have lied to authorities at that point, thus implicating themselves, and now they have a dead son. They would not be able to explain why they have him, why he's deceased, when they reported that he was in a missing nature park. Is this why they cut Cassie off? Because at this point, they were in way too deep, and they didn't want their daughter to take the fall as well? Cassie appears to have been cut off from the family very shortly after the Camp DeSoto trip. So did they have to bury him, wait until he was skeletonized, easier to move, and all of these things were planted in the park the day before they searched? Did they know that when they just walked into the park and pointed out their son's things, it would shed suspicion, so they made all these arrangements the day before? Did they FedEx evidence to a relative to have it removed from the home because they were scared that the next 24 hours would put them under another search warrant? Is this why they showed no emotion at the park when they found his remains? Was it because they had already been grieving their son at home for weeks? Is this why, after finding Brian's remains, they felt safe enough to join up with Cassie again? Also, law enforcement is reporting that Brian's notebook appears salvageable. How? If his body and things have been underwater and he is now nothing but bones, how is the notebook salvageable? Unless it hadn't been there very long. This is crazy, yet somehow it is plausible. It's just a theory. These are just the random thoughts that are floating in my mind. Don't come for me. I'm just trying to make major coincidences understandable. I can't wrap my brains around Brian's parents placing human remains there. I know, it seems very far-fetched, but I know that there are no such thing as coincidences. I cannot push the nagging suspicion that there is more than meets the eye going on here. So, I've placed a lot of blame on the Northport PD, but in their defense, they haven't had much to work with. Two parents who've shown no concern for their missing son, no emotion over their missing future daughter-in-law, and no interest in helping authorities. They lawyered up before Gabby's body was even discovered. There have been so many incredulous mistakes that have happened over the last 2 months that go far beyond the local police department. The Laundrie family attorney, friend of the family, Stephen Bertolino, has been another huge liability in this case, or lack thereof. Bertolino puts a gag order on his clients before Brian goes missing and before Gabby's body was found, which criminalized his clients in the eyes of the public from the get-go. If the Laundries were not complicit in this case, then why make them look like soulless monsters? Then the constant mixing up of dates being fed to the Northport police and the FBI and the public by Bertolino and the Laundries. How do a mother and father forget what day their son left home, distraught, upset, and grieving? Is it preposterous to believe that they couldn't remember the exact date? Bertolino is going on every media outlet, blabbing away and quote-unquote misspeaking. This attorney has never met a camera he didn't like. Isn't it ironic that the Laundries have hired a narcissist with an anger problem to represent their son? A narcissist with an anger problem? In almost every interview, especially in his interview on October 21st with Ashley Banfield from News Nation, Bertolino, when pressed with the tough questions regarding Brian and the Laundries, fires back in anger and contempt. He looks physically angry in most interviews. He has hurt the Laundries more than helped, in my opinion. I hope the Laundries kept their receipt because I would be demanding a full refund on his services. And let's not forget about the Moab Police Department. They set the tone for poor investigations right from the beginning. After multiple 911 calls stating a male was striking a female, they named Gabby the aggressor while she sat in a patrol vehicle with bruising on her arms, a gash in her face, and swollen, tear-filled eyes, while they shared friendly banter with her abuser outside the vehicle and secured him a safe place to stay for the night while sending a distraught young woman to sleep alone in the van in the middle of nowhere. Outrageous. You want to know where this all could have been prevented? Right here in Moab, folks. This police stop was the most pivotal moment. It was a life or death moment. If this had been handled differently, both of these young people would still be alive today. Harsh assessment? Maybe, but I'm realistic. Law enforcement officers are trained to see the bigger picture, and these officers were manipulated by a charming, forked-tongued 23-year-old. Shame on them. I'm waiting in anticipation for further developments. I would like to think there are enough peculiarities attached to evidence to charge the parents with obstruction, if not more, if we're dealing with astute, skilled investigators, and I don't think we are. I'm praying the FBI are holding their cards close and that they've mapped out how the Laundries may have covered for Brian. Holding these people accountable will be the only way there will be any justice for Gabby at this point. Gabby has been let down from Moab to Northport. I pray that God will allow what has happened in the dark to come to the light. If you would like to give to the Gabby Petito Foundation, please visit GabbyPetitoFoundation.org.